This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. Today we are looking ahead to the second round of the NHL playoffs. I'm Ian Dennemy with Matt Larkin, Ryan Kennedy, and Ken Campbell. And before we get to the second round, let's talk a little bit about what happened in the first round. The Anaheim Ducks fell in Game 7 for the fourth year in a row. They lost Wednesday night to the Nashville Predators. Now, the big question facing the Ducks, given that their core is locked up for the long term, they're tied up against the cap, is what the future of Coach Bruce Boudreau is. So, guys, do you think Bruce Boudreau will be fired, and should he be fired?
Yes and yes. I think when you have a team in its window like you do, you can't be settling for these half measures here, like these playoff runs gone awry. And I think the microcosm of Bruce Boudreau's problems came in this series where the Ducks, they fell behind early, but then they took control. They had Nashville on the ropes, and they couldn't step on the neck. You always got to step on the neck in hockey. And not literally on the ice, that's a penalty, but metaphorically. And they couldn't do it. They should have finished them off in Game 6. They didn't. They opened the door for a Game 7 where Nashville had a very easy strategy. They had the better goalie in Pekka Rinne. They had the stronger defense core, and they used those two elements to keep the Ducks at bay. And that was the series. And I think you have to make a change because Boudreau's not getting it done, and you only probably have one or two more years with the Getzlaff, Perry, Kessler core up front before they are rendered ineffective completely.
And I saw something that was symptomatic of a coaching problem in Game 7 as well, because like you said, Ryan, there was a clear strategy with Nashville. To me, it was Secret Service defense. It was like they were treating Pekka Rinne as the president. They just completely collapsed. Protect the president, everybody
surrounding
Rinne. And no shots could get through. Yet in the entire game, all we saw every period over and over was Cam Fowler shooting from the point, Sammy Vatanen shooting from the point. The Ducks seem to be funneling everything from the point when they're actually a good down-low team. They're a good forechecking team, and they didn't seem to adjust that strategy. And whether it's fair or not, I mean, maybe we'll find out Boudreau told them to do it, and they said, no, coach. But circumstantially, it sure looks like they were not coached right.
Yeah, I can't imagine that Bruce Boudreau is going to have his job after this series. I can't see any way that he doesn't get fired. I mean, he got a stay of execution this year when the team started so poorly, and a lot of people thought he should have been fired then. And, you know, I mean, now he's going to ask for another mulligan. I don't think it's going to happen. And I think what really concerns me about Bruce Boudreau's teams in the playoffs is not so much that they lose Game 7, but they don't come out prepared for Game 7, ever. Like, you know, you look at, like, going back to Washington-Pittsburgh. I mean, they got killed in that Game 7. They come out of these games, and they get down early, and then they're in a hole that they can't possibly dig out of. They actually probably could have dug out of last night's hole, but I don't know. I just got the sense that as soon as, like, when it was 1-0, I thought, okay, this isn't good. And then when it was 2-0, I just thought there was no way that Anaheim was going to come back. And to me, like, that's the biggest indictment of Bruce Boudreau, is that, you know, he's just been entirely unable to properly prepare his teams for Game 7, because they come out of the shoot in all of these big games. They're on home ice almost every time, and they just get beat, and they get beat badly in a lot of cases. And I mean, part of that's got to be on the coach. And you know, because a big part of a coach's job is to prepare his team for the big games. And I don't know, I just get the sense that, I don't know, that he's become the kind of coach where you look and you go, I don't really know if I've got a lot of confidence in this guy. So I just can't possibly see any way in which Bruce Boudreau keeps his job after this.
It's a really good point, Ken. And to me, you know, the Ducks played two dominant periods, but it was sort of too little too late. And watching them in the first period, it was almost like they were saying, oh, wait, this is Game 7?
Oh,
oh no! And I agree with the sort of questioning the confidence long-term in Bruce Boudreau. He kind of reminds me of Ron Wilson as a coach in terms of what his legacy might end up being. And to me, both guys, funnily enough, both Anaheim guys, both Washington guys, but they're turnaround coaches. There's guys that can get a young team from a non-playoff team into a competitive, high-scoring, great regular season team. It's like you can hire them temporarily as a consultant, if you will, to usher your team into competitiveness, but then you have to drop them because they can't seem to get over the proverbial hump.
Yeah. And the problem, of course, is once they get that team into contender status, you can't fire them right away. You have to wait till they fail a couple of times. And then, of course, you're in the quagmire they are now.
Yeah, yeah, you've got to give them the chance. And, yeah, I mean, I could see Bruce Boudreau being the next coach of, I don't know, maybe the Ottawa Senators or something. I don't know. I mean, he'd be a guy, like you say, that can get a team to a certain point but just can't seem to get it past. I mean, is it Bruce Boudreau's fault that Corey Perry didn't score in this series? Is it Bruce Boudreau's fault that Jacob Silverberg didn't score in this series? I mean, he put Perry with Getzlaff for a while, and Perry still didn't get, still didn't seem to be able to produce. You know, he took 21 shots in the series. That's only an average of 3 a game. That's not enough. And I just, I think that, obviously some of these star players have to look at themselves and the way they played in this series and wonder if, they're not the problem, but it comes down to the coach, and that's the easy out, and I'm sure that's the one they're going to take.
So speaking of the Ducks, they are obviously out. The Chicago Blackhawks were eliminated in the first round. The Los Angeles Kings were eliminated in the first round. That's 3 of the traditional Western Conference powers. That's 5 of the last 6 Stanley Cups. Is this a sort of a changing of the guard in the Western Conference? Are we going to see, these teams that are left, are they the new powers, or is this just a blip for those big three?
I think you have to divide that question. Personally, I see it more of a changing of the guard for Chicago. I worry more about the Hawks core because they're just so stretched out cap-wise, and I think Brent Seabrook isn't even the player he was a couple years ago. They can't continue to lean on Duncan Keith for everything defensively. They sorely needed that other top four defenseman. They really missed Johnny Oduya this year. And in order to replace him over the offseason this time around, if they want to get that top four guy, they're going to have another casualty at forward. I think it's going to have to be Andrew Shaw, which means the overall team core is going to be weakened again. I worry less about a team like LA because a lot of LA's best players are still pretty young. Tyler Toffoli's young. Jake Muzzin's young. Drew Doughty's still in his 20s. So overall, I'm far more worried about Chicago. Also, LA continue to have the best possession numbers in the league. They've been top 2, I believe, every year under Daryl Sutter, where Chicago took a nosedive in possession this year. So if I can answer that question sort of yes and no, that's how I'd put it.
I think it's just more indicative of the way the Western Conference is. All of these teams are good. So I don't know that it's necessarily a quote-unquote changing of the guard. You're just going to get some years when it's wide open, and this is one of those years. Like San Jose is a good example. They went into the playoffs as a major question mark, I think, in a lot of people's minds, and they came out of the first round as a serious contender for the Stanley Cup. That's just the way it is in the Western Conference. Welcome to the Central Division. Welcome to the Pacific Division. There's just a whole bunch of really good teams. And any year, and I think what it also says is what it also sort of tells us is, the margin between winning and losing is so fine. We could be talking about Chicago in the next round just as easily as we could have been talking about St. Louis in the next round. So I just think it's more indicative of the fact that, the West is so good and so strong and so deep with so many good teams that, it's just going to be a yearly thing now where some of these teams, somebody's got to lose, right? LA and San Jose played in the first round. That's part of the problem is that, two of the best teams in the Western Conference played in the first round. They both can't make it to the second round. One of them's got to lose. And in this case, it was the Kings and same in the Central Division. Two of the best teams in the league, Chicago and St. Louis, they met in the first round. And unfortunately, they both couldn't advance, and one of them had to lose. So I think it's more just indicative of how, you know, how tight and how good the Western Conference is.
The one thing I will say is Dallas, even though they did have their problems with Minnesota in the first round, they did it without Tyler Seguin, one of the best players in the league, one of the best offensive players in the league, to be sure. That's a team where I could see them sort of taking hold in the next couple of years. And, you know, LA, they do have some great young players, but you look at, like, Dustin Brown, Anje Kopitar, even, like, Jonathan Quick to a lesser extent, those are guys that are getting on in their career. And, you know, they're going to have some cap issues to sort out. Can they re-sign Milan Lucic? Who knows? St. Louis has a bit of an older core as well. Obviously, Vlad Tarasenko is going to be the driver for years now. Robbie Fabry, Colton Parayko, that's going to be fantastic as well. But Dallas is the one team to me where you never really know a trend until it happens. And, we've seen some good heavy teams win in the West. We've seen great puck possession teams win in the West. But what's Dallas going to bring in the next couple of years, starting with this run where they'll meet up against St. Louis? Now, unfortunately, they're probably going to do it without Tyler Seguin for at least the first couple of games of the series. So we might not know the full extent of what the Stars can do this year. But certainly next year, they're going to retain some of the best young talent they have. Not only Seguin, obviously Jamie Benn, John Klingberg. They're continually going to bring young defensemen up who are getting prepared the right way in the American Hockey League. So that would be my one consideration, is that Dallas could be that next team that we see consistently at the top, even if it's not necessarily this season.
Yeah, and I think it starts with the general manager in that organization.
Totally.
I think Dallas is a really, really good team, but I think they're a really flawed team, and I think they're going to be exposed in the next round as a flawed team. But I can't imagine that a general manager is as smart and as good as Jim Nill is going to, you know, let this team continue to be just this offensive juggernaut that can't seem to really keep the puck out of its net. And once they learn to do that, if they can balance that and still keep, you know, some of their offensive identity, then, yeah, you're probably right, Brian.
I think there's a lot of help on the way. I love when I look at Dallas's farm system. It's true. Right now they're a very flawed team defensively. Their possession numbers look good on paper, but it's almost exclusively skewed towards offense. So I think they're pretty sieve-like right now, and it's going to eventually lead to their downfall in the playoffs. But you've got Steven Johns, you've got Esa Lindell, you've got Julius Honka that's going to eventually form that long-term blue line with John Klingberg. I think that in a couple years, and even just their forward core, Valerie Nichushkin's still young. Denis Gurianov hasn't made the team yet. Jason Dickinson has got good size, good young center. Radek Faxa is finally going to stick with the team by the looks of it now. The Stars have a lot of help on the way, and they're already looking pretty competitive. So to me, over the next 5 years, I think we're going to start to see Dallas morph into a legit Stanley Cup contender.
And Faxa could be that two-way guy that you need that helps you on the defensive end more so than the offensive end.
Mm-hmm. Well, since we've just scooped ourselves on the Dallas St. Louis series, let's move on and talk about the second round. We just said a lot about Dallas, so Dallas St. Louis, who you got?
St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Yeah. Having said all that, yeah, with Tyler Seguin out, you know, that Jim Neal said, just today that he's not skating yet, and once he begins skating, he's going to need 4 or 5 days. So, I mean, we can surmise that it's going to be at least game 3 or 4 before he's even a possibility. And by that time, if St. Louis plays the way that they did against Chicago for the most part, putting away that boogeyman that was the Blackhawks, I think they're going to have enough of a cushion that they can take that series, even if Tyler Seguin comes back 100% ready to go. And that's a lot to put on a guy that's been out for quite a while.
And even if Tyler Seguin learns how to become a goaltender and becomes a Vezina Trophy,
yeah,
maybe then. Or if he learns how to play defense and becomes the next, you know, Rod Langway, maybe.
Yeah.
I just have no faith in the Stars. I didn't have any faith before the playoffs started. I'm not sure I have less now, but they didn't play a very good team in the first round.
Nope.
Minnesota, they were giving it the old college try, the old University of Minnesota rah-rah college try, and they hung in and they gave it their best, but they weren't a very good team. And the Stars at times looked really leaky against a not very good team. And I just think that this team, I wish it weren't the case, because I would love to see a team like this win the Stanley Cup. I'd love to see a team that takes offensive chances and plays pond hockey and does all those things. I'd love to see them win, but they won't. it's just not the way you win in the playoffs. And I think they're going to get taken to school a little bit here.
And I agree. I mean, Dallas made Minnesota, of all teams, look high octane. Minnesota was an extremely offensively challenged team this year, and they look like they almost pulled off their own Miracle on Manchester type of comeback there in Game 6.
Yeah.
They were scoring at will.
The graphic came up on the broadcast I was watching.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I think a big problem, I've said it many times, it's well documented, I guess, at this point, I hate the goalie flip-flopping. And it's a great case study, Dallas and St. Louis, because St. Louis is a team that also had a 1A, 1B setup. But what did St. Louis do? Stuck with Brian Elliott. And Brian Elliott gave up 4 goals in Game 5, 5 goals in Game 6, if I'm not mistaken. That could have been reason to waver and say, oh my God, we got to put in Jake Allen. But they stuck with Elliott, and they rode him for the deciding game, and he delivered for them. Whereas Dallas already, it's one bad game, and it seems Niemi or Lehtinen gets yanked again and again. They keep going back and forth. And it's the over-the-shoulder, looking-over-your-shoulder mentality. And I think it's leading to some questionable performances from both goalies right now in Dallas.
The one fly in the ointment I will point out is that St. Louis just came off perhaps the most emotional victory series they've ever had, or at least one in modern times. There could be a bit of a letdown for the Blues if they're not focused right away. Dallas, they've had a couple of days to ruminate on what they've accomplished so far. St. Louis, they need to step on the gas right away and put the series out of control as soon as they can.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And I liken it back to, I was covering the Leafs for the Toronto Star during the heyday of the Battle of Ontario. And I talked to some of the Senators about this, and they actually agreed with me. I just didn't think that the Senators would ever win a Stanley Cup until they beat the Toronto Maple Leafs in a playoff series. Mm-hmm. And I thought once they did that, they were just going to roll over everybody. Unfortunately, that never happened. They never, once they got to be really good, Toronto was bad, and they never ended up playing them in the playoffs. But I think this is kind of the same thing. I think, now that St. Louis has shed that, that burden of having to beat the Blackhawks, and they've done it. I'm looking for some big things from these guys.
San Jose versus Nashville. We talked about both teams pulling off the upset. How seriously do we take either of these teams now? And are either of them real contenders? And who wins this series?
I like the Sharks in this one. I mean, hey, they made it look, I don't want to go as far as saying easy against the Kings, but they legitimately outclassed a powerhouse Kings team that a lot of people want picked to win the Stanley Cup. And to me, fact of the matter is, the Sharks have arguably 3 players right now playing at MVP level. Joe Thornton, obviously a Hart candidate. I still think Joe Pavelski is one of the most underappreciated players in the game. I think he's a top 10 player in the world right now. He could do everything on the ice.
Yeah.
And obviously Brent Burns. And yes, the Ducks had a good defense core, but it's still a young defense core. Guys like Lindholm and Vatanen, it's different when you go up against the Burns-Martin tandem and Mark-Edward Vlasic. Those guys are horses, and they can truly cancel out Nashville's Weber and Josi. It could almost be a wash, and I think that's going to be a big difference. That's an advantage that Nashville arguably had over Anaheim, especially when Nashville got a lead in Game 7. They can play that shutdown with that dominant tandem. But San Jose has that same ability, and I think because they can neutralize that factor, offensively they're a far superior team. Their power play is just unbelievable. I love watching the Sharks' power play. I've said before, it's like an instructional video. This is how you do a power play. It's unbelievable watching them. I just think they've got an edge in too many areas. And a lot of people are going to say Pekka Rinne is a superior goaltender to Martin Jones. I don't know if that's true. If you look closely at the underlying numbers, Rinne looks great. He's the eye test goalie. He's big. He's athletic. But he doesn't stop the puck as much as he used to. And even if you look in Game 7, people are saying Rinne stole the game. I don't know if he did. He gave up a ton of rebounds, and he just had that defense corps protecting him, clearing the puck, diving into the crease, diving on the Ducks players. So I don't even know if the Preds have the goaltending advantage. I just think the Sharks overall are better in every way.
I would agree with you, Matt, but I'm a lot more of a believer in the Predators now than I was before the playoffs. They proved a lot in terms of being able to, you know, to overcome adversity and to play as a unit. I mean, that's sort of the you know, I think what the theme of this series is going to be, the strength of the collective, you know, against the star power. And I think the star power is going to win out. I think, you know, but it didn't in the first round. I mean, Anaheim had the star power over the Predators in the first round, and, you know, their stars didn't show up, and their stars didn't play very well, and they were neutralized. So, you know, I do think it's going to go San Jose's way. I don't think it's going to be a seven-game series, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than certainly I would have thought before the playoffs started. If you had told me, you know, before the playoffs started that, you know, Nashville was going to somehow get past Anaheim and they were going to play San Jose in the second round, I would have thought that it would be a walk for San Jose. I'm not as convinced now that it's going to be. I think that it's going to be five or six pretty close games, but I think when it comes down to it that San Jose is just going to have that extra bit of firepower, that extra, you know, that extra power play, that extra, you know, that little bit extra that's going to put them ahead, and I think that they'll take it in probably five or six games.
Yeah. I can see this being very ugly hockey. Nashville has obviously realized that when outskilled, which they usually are just based on their forward core, that they need to just lock things down, and that's how they can get stuff done. And I like your use of the word collective there, Ken. It reminds me, you know, we've seen this in playoffs past, like, you know, when the Florida Panthers made their run to the final, who were their hotshot marquee forwards and players? There wasn't a lot there. You know, you look at, you know, some of the, you know, the New Jersey teams that made runs, and, you know, some of the other teams during that frankly awful period of hockey, you know, but it happened, and they did it out of necessity,
and it might be back.
Yeah, hopefully it's not back. Yeah, Dallas is the antidote to that, right?
Yeah, Carl Wilson is your go-to guy.
Yeah,
you know, he's become like the second coming of Claude Lemieux, but still,
right,
when he's your go-to offensive guy in the playoffs, you're lacking a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Paul Gostad had a crucial goal for you, that sort of thing. Interesting matchup will be obviously Ryan Johansson and who he goes up against, because, you know, the Sharks, they're so deep down the middle, and the guys they have are so effective. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out, what sort of chess match there is there, because there's a guy that, you know, we've seen some pretty good raw skill from him, and last year in Columbus, obviously, he had a fantastic campaign. But, you know, is he ready for another big challenge in these playoffs where they're going to need some offense if they're going to run with these Sharks? That to me is going to be a pretty interesting subplot.
And it's a good point you made too, Ryan, like what you were saying about St. Louis. It sort of applies to the Sharks as well. The Sharks also slayed their Minotaur. So are they going to get caught looking past Nashville? It's something to absolutely watch out for.
Let's move on to the Eastern Conference. The Tampa Bay Lightning versus the New York Islanders. They played Game 1 on Wednesday night. The Islanders won. Was that a surprise?
But we did this beforehand. We've talked about this before that game. Right, guys?
No, we're right? Okay, quick question. Do we like that round two started before the entire first round was over?
I found it icky. I mean, I hate to sound like an old dinosaur sports writer from the 1950s.
Dinosaurs
can't a purist, you know, a guy that thinks that umpiring is good because of human error, all that stuff. But I did find it kind of icky. I found myself last night thinking like, what? Game one? No, what? Game seven? No. Game seven? What? Game one? I couldn't focus on game one of round two when there was a game seven hours later.
You have ADD? What's so difficult about it?
I don't know. There's no logical explanation. I know that I'm wrong.
The matchup's decided. Start the damn series. Like, who cares, man? Like, I think I thought it was a great thing that they did last night. They have two games on a Wednesday night. They built up Wednesday night as this, you know, night you love to hate and all this kind of crap, and it's the rivalry night and everything. So, you know, they wanted two games, and you know what? Giddy up, let's go. Start the other series. If you get done early, then you start your series early, and you get finished
even earlier, and you have the advantage of maybe having a little more rest going into the next round. I didn't have a problem with it at all.
Yeah, I prefer it over the NBA style of the first round will take 1 month, and then we'll see what happens after that. Hopefully you're still watching. Like, the Raptors are still in the first round, and it's not even like they could play two more times.
Mm-hmm. Game five goes July 14th.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But now they had the game Wednesday night. Then they're not playing again until Saturday. And then they're not playing again until Tuesday. And then they're not playing again until the following Friday.
Yeah.
It's going to be a week and a half, and they will have only played four games anyway. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of goofy that way, but yeah. Whatever.
And to segue into the actual Tampa Bay Islanders matchup, this is tricky. Obviously, Ben Bishop looked really rusty after his layoff going into game one. I think the advantage Tampa has here is that there's so much time between the games that they can reset a lot. And now this is an Islanders team that obviously has surprised so far. Thomas Greiss, who I slandered on our last podcast.
And the one before that. And the one before
yeah,
that.
Turned out to be like, you know, a potential Conn Smythe, front runner in the first round. So thanks a lot for that, Thomas. And John Tavares is, seizing his destiny as, this franchise cornerstone that the Islanders have been building around for years now. Tampa Bay, they've got a lot of weapons. Still some important guys on the shelf. I just realized that, like, oh man, we don't have Stamkos versus Tavares, one versus one, right off the hop. That's kind of a shame, even though we do have Tavares versus Hedman, one versus two in the same draft. That's pretty fun, too, especially because they're a forward and a defenseman. But I think, the fact that the series is spread out, and I gather part of it's going to be because the Barclays Center has such a heavy schedule of events, though I can't say that for sure. I think that's going to benefit Tampa because New York can't really roll on the good times the way they did at the end of their first round series. And I think Tampa can make adjustments, and from there, their superior skill and the guys they have at every position can get into that that mode they need to be in to dispatch this team.
And I mean,
you're picking Tampa, right? Like I couldn't figure out what you were saying by the end. So you're picking Tampa to win this series?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Okay. Good. All right. Just so I know. Just like
for the record.
I'm still picking Tampa Bay to win, but I'm admittedly nervous, and it's the things that were supposed to be a problem for the Islanders are slowly inverting. It was John Tavares had a bad year; he's not himself, and all of a sudden the playoffs. So, oh wait, no, I'm John Tavares. Surprise, everyone! I always was.
He's better than ever.
I just saved my best for the playoffs. So suddenly the Islanders, they didn't have that superstar edge all regular season. Now they have it in the playoffs, and now all of a sudden it makes the absence of Stamkos for Tampa Bay a bit scarier. And also, goaltending was supposed to be a question mark for the Islanders because Thomas Greiss, he never played more than 25 games. Now he's played 48, I believe. So I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. But if it doesn't drop, the supposed advantage that the Lightning have, I don't know if they're going to gain that advantage. So I still have to stick with the pick. I want to stick to my guns. Tampa Bay in six. So now they got to win four of the next five. I still think they'll prevail because they're a great possession team and Victor Hedman can dominate a game. I think that Bishop will eventually outplay Greiss, but to me this series has suddenly gotten very interesting, especially you look at Tampa Bay, when Stralman's not back, when Stralman's still out of the lineup, that Islander forecheck is devastating. They hit almost more than any team in the league. Jack Capuano plays a true four lines, so he sends that blunt instrument line of Martin, Clutterbuck, Cizikas out as often in the playoffs as he would during the regular season. That puts a hurt on defense.
Too, eh? Yeah. Like in overtime and all the time. Like late in the third period, he's got those guys out there all the time.
That's right. Those guys are actual game-changing players. And suddenly you look, Boychuk, Letty, Hamonic, that's a pretty strong top three, well-rounded guys. Boychuk and Hamonic especially, because they can play physical as well. They can play big minutes. So I find myself looking at the Islanders in a different light all of a sudden, thinking, maybe they are kind of good. So, Tampa Bay, but I'm a bit worried right now.
Well, I picked the Islanders from the beginning, and I picked them to make the conference final. And I go back to the last day of the season when they lost to Philadelphia and finished in that number one wild card spot. I think that was the best thing that could happen to the New York Islanders. What I think some people don't forget or don't seem to be bringing up here is that the Islanders had 100 points this year. Tampa Bay had 97. I know Tampa Bay had one more win, but I'm telling you guys, the Islanders played in a way tougher division than Tampa Bay did, and you guys know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tampa Bay played the worst team in the playoffs in the first round. The worst team in the Detroit Red Wings. I don't think they're as good as everybody's making them out to be. I think the Islanders played in a way tougher division and faced way better competition throughout the course of the season, and I think it's showing right now. And I think they're every bit as good as the Islanders, and without Stamkos for sure in this series, almost certainly in this series, and probably without Stroman, I just don't know that they have that they have enough. And for me, you know, to see John Tavares playing the way he's playing, it's almost like he's on a mission. Like, for me, this guy was born to play hockey, and he was kind of born for these kinds of moments. And I don't know, I just see a guy who's you know, I mean, in the playoffs, we might talk about how, you know, you've got to get contributions from everybody, and the Islanders are getting that, but you also need, you know, your star players to play out of their minds, and that's what he's doing here. And it just seems like he's on some kind of personal mission to make this team a serious Stanley Cup contender, and I think they're going to do it.
Finally, the Pittsburgh Penguins versus Washington Capitals, the marquee matchup of the second round, Sid versus Ovi. Who you got?
It is actually a two-player series. There's no question about it. It's the one star for one team, Nicholas Backstrom, against the superstar for the other team of Jenny Malkin. No question. No, I think that series is about so much more than just Sid and Ovi now. I mean, it used to be that way, but I think now, you know, there's so many interesting things to consider about this series. Both teams are lights out on the power play. Both teams have been really good penalty killing. You know, they're both getting really good goaltending. You know, this should be a great series, not just because of number, you know, 8 and 87. It's got so much depth to it and so much texture to it. I think it's really going to be fun to watch. You know, I picked Washington to make the final before the playoffs. I'm going to stay with that. I think they've I think they're a team that has, you know, started to prove people wrong, and you know, this is again one of those other sort of situations where they're not going to be taken seriously until they, you know, slay the dragon, and this is one of their dragons. You know, the New York Rangers were one for the Washington Capitals. They just didn't seem to be able to get past them, and you know, here's another one. And I think right now this team, this Washington team, is on a mission. You know, they've got just such depth, and they're from top to bottom, they're difficult to stop, and you know, they're getting goaltending. Obviously, John Carlson is playing out of his mind. You know, Nicholas Backstrom is putting up all kinds of points, and like what Washington had, like I think four or five guys who had, you know, 5 points in that series. So I just think they're going to be a little too much for the Penguins to handle at this point.
Now, I took Pittsburgh to go to the Stanley Cup Final in my bracket, and I had them beating Washington in this series. I'm going to stick with that. Pittsburgh's the better possession team, which is kind of bizarre to think about given how amazing the Caps were in the regular season in terms of getting wins. I just think that Pittsburgh is one of those teams that Crosby-Ovechkin rivalry, you know, Crosby's in Ovechkin's head. I don't think it's the other way around, and, you know, we've seen Crosby win pretty much everything at this point, certainly in his pro career, and he almost won a Memorial Cup as a junior, but he faced Corey Perry's London Knights. But he just wins those clutch games, and we haven't seen Ovechkin win anything other than the World Championship, which, let's face it, no one over here cares about, because it only involves some of the best players in the world, and we're all watching the Stanley Cup in North America when it happens. Obviously, goaltending is going to be something we'll have to keep an eye on with Pittsburgh due to injuries. You know, if it's Matt Murray, then it's like you've got a very young guy who is playing exceptional. Does Marc-Andre Fleury come back from that concussion and play how he can? Maybe they just stick with Murray if he's rolling. That would be my one concern, and I do think it's going to be a long series. But the other interesting subplot, of course, is Brooks Orpik and Matt Niskanen, former Penguins, now with the Caps, and I know Orpik's dinged up, obviously, right now, but just kind of an interesting little thing where, you know, these guys played for the one team for a long time. Now they're with Washington trying to get them over the hump. What does that do to the dynamic on the ice and how these teams size each other up? But I think Pittsburgh can hang with Washington, and I think they have the poise to ultimately come out. I would say this will be a 7-game series and an instant classic, probably.
I agree about 7-game, the instant classic. I think it's the closest matchup of all round two matchups. I think it's going to come down to maybe even an overtime goal in game 7. I think they're so close.
That would be fun.
And, you know, I'm a Washington guy, too. They're my pick to go to the final in the East, but Pittsburgh's going to give them a really tough run. Pittsburgh arguably was the best team in the NHL from, say, January 1st on. Dominant possession. They finally figured out how to use Phil Kessel, playing him away from Crosby and Malkin on his own line where he can handle the puck. He's completely transformed back into what he was when he was a good player in Toronto. He's proving to be kind of a clutch scorer in the playoffs as well. So Pittsburgh is very dangerous. I believe in Pittsburgh. At the same time, the Capitals are going to offer them something that I don't think the Rangers could. The Rangers supposedly had a deep blue line, but they weren't themselves in the first round. You had Ryan McDonough missing games, and when he was back, his hand was hurt. Dan Girardi is a shell now. He's no longer an effective NHL defenseman, I'm sorry to say. It's a different story than when you're going up against John Carlson and Carl Alsner, Matt Niskanen, and even Dmitry Orlov. Orpik, if he's healthy, I think it's going to be a tougher assignment for the Penguin forwards. And also, Washington has a different kind of depth at forward in terms of high-end skill than what the Rangers had. The Rangers had, you know, Derek Steppen, Derek Brassard up the middle. That's not Nicholas Backstrom and Evgeny Kuznetsov. Rangers had Rick Nash. That's not Alex Ovechkin. So Washington's ability to counterattack Pittsburgh's offense is going to be something that the Rangers cannot do. For that reason, I think the Caps still have the edge. But, oh, baby, I can't wait for this. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, if I'm Pittsburgh, I push the pace right from the time they drop the puck in the first game. Yeah. Like, I push the pace, and I just keep my foot on the gas for the entire series and just try and beat them with speed. And I think that's one area of the game where Pittsburgh has a real decided advantage over Washington. And I'd love to see them be able to do that and see if Washington can keep that pace or use their size to slow them down. But if I'm Pittsburgh, that's my strategy, is to just push it right from the beginning and make these guys try and keep up with us.
There you have it. That'll do it for this week. Thanks for listening. Get all your playoff news at THN.com, and we'll see you in time for round 3.